Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 11. As Callie grew more and more concerned about Billy's health, she found the more mundane aspects of daily life simultaneously irritating and a blessed relief. None of these loomed larger than the selection of a wedding gift for David and Marilyn. Even though she had yet to receive an invitation to their wedding, she knew from past experience that selecting the right gift for nice people was a nerve-wracking experience, and she wanted to get a head start. "Any ideas?" she asked the cats strewn casually over her bed one night. The majority of them continued sleeping as if she had said nothing at all. Even Bernice, who had been attentive up to this point, licked her paw as if Callie hadn't spoken. Callie began leafing through the mail-order catalog she had stacked next to the bed specifically for this purpose and quickly recognized the problem. She was not a nice person. She did do nice things for those of all species, both plant and animal, on occasion, but she didn't radiate niceness the way David did. In retrospect, I think I stayed with David all those years in hopes that I could become nice like him, too, she confided to the cats. That, plus, he was everything a normal mother would want for her daughter, or at least what I think a normal mother would want for her daughter. But because Callie had not had any actual experience with a normal mother, she couldn't be sure about that. Now that David was marrying someone as nice as he was, that doubled the torment she used to experience when she tried to select gifts for him. "I don't think I ever got David anything he really liked," she further confessed to the mound of sleeping cats. "But I wouldn't have minded if he hadn't been too nice to tell me this." While the cats dozed on, she recalled spending hours choosing a sweater or shirt for him, only to stumble upon it later, stuffed behind a potted plant or in the bottom drawer of his desk where, she assumed, he thought she'd never notice it. When she would ask him why he didn't just exchange the gift, he'd blush bright red and exclaim apologetically, "Oh, darling, I didn't want to hurt your feelings." Evidently a nice person, such as Marilyn, would totally understand this, giving rise to images of nice homes all over the country filled with useless gifts hidden in every corner. But to Callie, it made no sense. "How about a big basket of native New Hampshire foodstuffs?" Callie suggested to Sparky when she noticed he had one eye open. He immediately closed it. Once Callie accepted that she lacked the nice gene and thus probably could never select a gift that would please David, she began buying him food presents. This she saw as conferring two advantages. First, if he didn't like a food gift, she could eat it herself when she visited him, which he would let her do because he was too nice to tell her not to. Second, if she didn't happen to like the food she'd chosen for him either, eventually it would rot and he could throw it away, thereby not increasing the clutter in his home or the torment he experienced when she happened upon the unused item months later. After flipping through catalogs for an hour, though, Callie had to accept that buying for two nice people of opposite sexes far more than doubled the problem. When she found herself actually contemplating a hideous lazy Susan, an imported bedding embroidered with little hearts and the happy couple's names and the date of their wedding, she gave up and turned off the light, too discouraged to worry about the next item on her do list, the future. The future caught up with Callie much sooner than expected, the next day, in fact. It was a chilly fall day. Not cold enough that she needed to use the heater in the cat room yet, but cold enough that she kept a fire in the wood stove so the house would be extra warm for Billy and Nana. She had started calling another of Alicia's kittens Florence because she always trailed after Billy and Nana, a little gray nurse wearing a white apron and socks. The kitten also answered when Callie called her so she could use Florence to keep track of Billy, too. Previously, she had counted on Nana to do this, but as the weather grew colder, Nana began to fail rapidly. In spite of all of Callie's efforts to keep her going, the old dog's heart had more and more trouble meeting the demands of that old dog body. That day, Billy and Nana had disappeared around the back of the house with some weeds for the compost pile. When he didn't appear right away, Callie called Florence rather than rush to check on him. She had done this before, and Billy made it quite clear that he found her overly attentive behavior annoying. Rather than risk upsetting him, she now relied on Florence to alert her of his whereabouts. However, this time Florence didn't answer, and when Callie ran into the backyard, she understood why. Nana lay on the grass with Billy kneeling over her, tears streaming down his face, while Florence batted Billy's hand with her head, trying to get him to notice her. Callie touched Billy's shoulder lightly and signed when he looked up at her. "What happened?" He shrugged. "Nana tried to run to me. Couldn't. Fell down." Callie gestured toward the house, and Billy picked up the old dog and carried her to the treatment room, where he gently laid her on the counter for Callie to examine. Nana's breathing was labored, her gums cyanotic, her vital signs barely capable of supporting life. "This is the way the world ends," wrote T.S. Eliot, "not with a bang, but a whimper." Billy touched her arm. "Hope?" She shook her head. "No hope." He looked at the clock. "Is it time?" She shook her head. "Yes." Billy had helped Callie anesthetize the cat, so he knew how to hold Nana's leg to raise the vein she needed to inject the euthanasia solution. When his dog died, he hugged Callie and let out a tortured cry. "Yop, yop, yop." It was the only sound she had ever heard him make. Finally, when neither one of them could cry anymore, Billy let go of her and pointed through the window to the blue spruce beneath which Nana used to sleep while they worked. "May I bury her there?" Callie nodded. "Yes." She got the shovel while he carried Nana to the place he'd chosen, but when she began to dig, he shook his head. "No, I want to do it." She gave him the shovel and sat on the ground beside Nana, stroking her fur while Billy dug a grave for her. After he buried her, they rolled a large rock on top of the grave, and Callie painted Nana on it with the blue paint Billy selected from their collection. Then he asked her to take him home. In front of his house, she grabbed his hand as he started to get out of the van. "Do you want me to stay with you?" He looked at her for the longest time, then signed, "No. Go back home to the cats." Later, she asked the god she wasn't even sure she believed in to forgive her for thinking it, but she wished she had stayed and made love to him that night. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.